You talk about the dangers of a perfect storm of the financial world, including 8 potential bubbles that could burst. Let's talk about those.
Well, I'm, when I look at the global or the world economy today and what we're going through, we're in the midst of a brutal financial deleveraging. As I mentioned before, we haven't seen this since the 30s. And what does that mean? It means that we're seeing kind of the repricing downward, the reappraisal of the value of virtually every asset in the world. And whether it's housing or stocks or whatever the situation
is. And is that healthy?
Well, it has to happen because we allowed the leveraging to get out of control.
Yes.
It took us more than 10 years to see the leverage built up. And for your listeners, what does leverage mean? Well, it means that, give you an example, usually banks leverage 10 to 1, which means, if they have, $1 billion of assets, they would borrow, $9 billion, so they would have $10 billion in assets, and they would lend that. And that was kind of considered a reasonable amount of leverage. And but in the last 10 years, leverage, because our regulators were asleep at the switch, leverage just got out of control. I'll give you an example. You have, Bear Stearns, the Wall Street investment firm, they were leveraged by about 34 to 1.
Wow.
And some of the other investment banks were not far behind. You think that they weren't just the outlier. I mean, Morgan Stanley was 32 to 1, for example. Then you had the government, quasi-government agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were leveraged roughly 74 to 1.
74 to 1?
Right. And then, believe it or not, there's a bank in Germany that had actually bought a piece of an Irish bank. It's called Hypo Real Estate Bank. These guys took the cake. They were leveraged 112 to 1.
Who let them all do this?
Yeah, the regulators asleep at the switch. I mean, we had from Alan Greenspan on down, these outfits were just asleep at the switch.
Did they not know this?
They
did not care.
I think they just figured it would never end. And so what happened is they had a we're now in the process of, it took a decade to build this up. We're tearing it down. We're deleveraging, and we're doing it very, very rapidly.
Yeah.
And it's putting enormous pressure on our central bank and on our other authorities. And so we're in this horrible position where the Federal Reserve, for instance, has cut short-term interest rates by, from 5.25% very quickly down to zero. And then they're doing, this kind of exotic easing, by buying up securities and the rest. And then, of course, we're going into these huge bailouts with the Treasury. But, either it's not working, or at best it's just keeping us from
a disaster,
totally collapsing. And the reason, my theory is that the reason is that the markets realize that we have
And this is worldwide. It's not just here now.
No, it's worldwide. We can get into it. But I think the markets look around and they say, this is not just the subprime bubble. This is this is much bigger than that. We're talking about 8 bubbles, with the subprime, ironically, being the smallest. I mean,
but that's the one we saw sticking out of the water.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. The subprime bubble was about $1.5 trillion. Of subprime-related mortgage loans. But, the markets looked around, and I count 8 bubbles. I mean, there's the emerging market debt bubble. There's the outstanding credit. That's a $5 trillion. There's the outstanding credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's $2.5 trillion. Yeah. Commercial real estate, $25 trillion. Foreign exchange derivatives, $56 trillion. Then there's a famous, credit default swaps, which is that fancy paper insurance paper.
Yep.
$58 trillion. Well, I count all this up and I say, look, we're talking about 8 bubbles worth roughly $200 trillion of worst case, you know, global financial exposure.
And of these eight bubbles that could bust, how many could really hurt us if it happened? One? Can we take one more rabbit punch?
I'm not sure we can even take one more. I mean, take the if eight are worth 200 billion potentially.
200 trillion?
300 trillion potentially. Let's assume just a 10% default.
That's $20 trillion.
Okay. Now what is global GDP? $50 trillion.
Geez.
So we're talking big money. So you say, why aren't markets rallying? Because look, if I told you the Fed was going to drop interest rates to nothing, you'd assume the stock market would
go through the roof, and it's not. Or you'd think car sales would go through the roof.
You would assume, but I think you know it shows you that you know the ineffectiveness of the of our financial governmental institutions to come to terms with a. You know, potential, and I say it's a potential, a perfect storm. If we had a perfect storm of disaster where you had, you know, more than one of these bubbles, so they all came together and you had a bursting, then you can see why people, investors around the world are very, very, very nervous. Everyone, you know, in the 30s, people stuffed cash into mattresses. What did they do today? They move into short-term government debt.
Yep. Now, is Afghanistan and the Iraq wars having any effect on this at all for us?
Well, you know, I certainly think it adds to the uncertainty, you know, in terms of, I mean, if you're, anytime you, you know, right now we have perception in the global market that there's a lot of financial risk potentially. And I think what we haven't added to this mix is the potential for political risk, and there's concerns about what's going on in China and certainly Afghanistan, and I would say the bigger issue is Pakistan right now, the concern about a negative political transition there.
Well, plus we just put on some lists today, A.Q. Khan, the father of Pakistan's nuclear program. Apparently, they still think he may be involved in some things.
Yeah, no, it's very, very, it's very frightening. So, and you say, why does political risk affect, you know, the average person, the working American's pocketbook?
Those that are working.
It moves more investors to the sidelines. They move into treasuries. I mean, you can go to a bank now, and most of the banks, you cannot get into a treasury fund.
Why not?
Because they're so overloaded.
With people who want in?
People who want in, but they say, oh, we're closed.